A63. Number 8A.
We take today another big subject to show the universality of the world order, the creative world order. And in order to show the universality of it, we will have to see that this creative world order is demonstrating itself without the help of people, independent of people. Therefore, to show that it is an idea in being. The moment we would find that the world order demonstrates itself in a realm where people have no say in it, then naturally we would see that the creative order of the world is a law that is in being and therefore independent of people, but therefore that world order is a divine idea. So what can we do if we want to see if this law operates without people? Well, one of the examples we can take is that we see, has it operated long before man was on this earth? Is it therefore a law that antedated man and was in operation without man, so that we could see it is a law of divine nature? It's an idea. The biggest evolution that we naturally have on this planet would be the evolution of Earth, of planet Earth. And therefore, if we consider the long-range evolution of planet Earth and would see that the evolution would go through very definite stages, even before man appeared, that then we would have a kind of a proof or indication that this world order is actually the word of God and has nothing to do with us. And so I want to take these long-range examples in order to investigate the impersonal idea called the law of creation. We know that natural science up to now could never prove evolution, that the various stages in evolution are inexplicable through the laws of matter. I always must say up to now, because we never know what will happen in the future. And so I want to start and show that the fundamental questions that natural science has are questions that have never been able to be, were never answered. I refer here, for instance, to those seven enigmas of the world that great scientist Dubois Raymond has put together. You have these also in that booklet which we once published through the Institute, The Seven Synonymous Terms for God. One of the articles in there was about creativity, and it summarized Dubois Raymond's seven great enigmas of the world. I repeat them here so that we have a flow in it. The first enigma therefore an enigma that has not been solved, is what is the origin of movement? What is the origin of movement? Why is there movement? From where does movement come from? What is that creative force at work which brings forth movement? Why is not everything static? And so it is a question of the first cause, so to say, first creative cause, that question which has never been able to be answered, was never answered. And we can see it is a question about mind. The answer that Mrs. Eddy gives says that mind is the cause of all movement, that mind is the creator of all movement, that mind brings everything into action. So Mrs. Eddy, in a way, would explain that question through mind. The second question that he had was, what is the nature of matter and energy? What is the nature of matter and energy? You see, again, it has to do with our second synonymous term, spirit. The question, what is substance? What is reality? This is still a great question. One really does not know what reality is. Is the material world reality? Is the world of energy reality? Or is the world of information reality? Is the world of spiritual ideas reality? These are the questions that are not answered, except we answer them through the synonymous term spirit, and say spirit is the only nature that exists, and it's the nature of reality. He has a third question, which for him still is an enigma, namely, how do the sensations arise? How do the sensations, the perceptive faculties, arise? You can see the answer is soul and soul sense. But from a material point of view, natural science cannot answer this. It's one of the great enigma, how on earth, say, a light wave that comes from a light source and which is nothing else but an electromagnetic wave of a certain length, how that wave, as a wave, as an electromagnetic wave, can touch the eye, the retina, how that can be transformed and channelized and transmitted through the nerves to the brain, how the brain takes those information and translates it again into a sensation, how that sensation afterwards is translated into a feeling, perhaps into an aesthetic feeling, so that finally we say, oh, this is a beautiful warm green. How can an electromagnetic wave of a certain wavelength suddenly be a warm green? These are processes that nobody has been able to explain up to now. This manifold translation and translation and translation from a dead, cold electromagnetic wave into a warm feeling about the color. I'm calling it a warm green, for instance, or a beautiful red, or something like that. So a translation from something that is purely of the nature of energy, of electric energy, into a psychological feeling, into an aesthetic feeling. How is that possible? This is a great enigma. We naturally know that soul is that general law of translatability that we have in being that can translate the identity of being into all kinds of levels without losing its identity, but always manifesting itself in a different way. So that the identities of being are showing themselves forth in multiple translated forms and therefore manifest themselves as soul. We have a fourth question. What is the background of free will? What is the background of free will? We have touched quickly already this week on the question of free will. Has man a free will? That's a great point of discussion in philosophy. Free will of man, has he a free will? Or is he bound to principle? The fifth enigma is, how does life originate? So he asks the question about life. Why? What happens so that out of anorganic matter, of dead matter, suddenly living matter came into being? Now the biologists and chemists seem to get nearer and nearer to that answer, and I'm not too well informed because those questions demand much, much too much understanding of the subject in order to talk a little bit intelligently about it. But that has been up to now always a great question. Can dead matter restructure itself so that it becomes living matter? How suddenly the first living cell could appear on Earth? And perhaps on many other planets you just have dead matter, just dead as a dodo. You can't have it deader else. So this is the great question, how could life suddenly originate? The sixth enigma they have is, what is conscious thinking and language? How could consciousness arise? How out of dead matter, or perhaps even afterwards of organic matter, suddenly something immaterial could be created called consciousness, which is not material? How could materiality be translated and transformed into a consciousness, in conscious thinking? And from conscious thinking, that enigma of language. How did language arise? How could that be developed? The seventh, and therefore you see the sixth, is really the question of consciousness, which Mrs. Eddy answers and says, well, we must accept truth as consciousness, and not the brain as a seat of consciousness. That truth is knowing itself and is conscious of itself, and therefore she answers it through the synonymous term truth. The seventh enigma is, what is the purpose of nature? You see, that's one of the great, great questions. Science, the sciences in general, they never ask about the purpose. They only state the laws. They feel the purpose of it that belongs to the politicians. We are here just to show you what science can do, what to do with it, and what the purpose of it, and what it serves, and what is the aim, and so on. That's not a question of science. And actually today, where we begin to see that with the development of science, we always get into more and more dangers, and nearer and nearer to complete bankruptcy of science, they naturally begin to ask, shouldn't really science include in its concept also the aim of science. What is the aim of nature? Why are we here? What is the aim that suddenly out of anorganic matter we had organic matter? What is the purpose that the various species did unfold? And we had more and more species, more and more subcategories. What's the purpose that suddenly man appeared? What's the purpose of nature that suddenly there should be thinking and knowledge? What is the purpose of it that suddenly something else but that law of creativity, namely man, should be able to interfere with the whole development and steer the development of the earth? What's the purpose of having suddenly a brain when before there was no thinking cap? What's the purpose of suddenly to have a thinking cap that begins to interfere with the course of nature? What's the purpose of all that? Where does it steer to? What will be the aim? See, that great question that also Teilhard de Chardin asked himself, that on which he called the point Omega. What is the point? What is the finalistic plan that is at work? Who knows that? Actually, this would be the very first question we should be able to answer, so that we can harmonize our activity with that plan. But we don't know that plan. Therefore, our whole life is blind. We are blind to the future. We are living in an age where we are completely blind what will happen in 100 years, in 500 years. We are completely blind what kind of contribution we really should give to that whole plan. We don't know. And therefore, actually, we could say then all our activities and endeavors are all vanity. Just as Jesus said, all is vanity. And it actually is, because we don't know in which plan we are working humanly. Nobody knows. We are always living just from one day to the other, to the next. So here we have that plan of love that we really should know, that the world should know, before we begin to act in this world. So these are the seven great enigmas of the world, and as far as I know, still today, not one of them has been solved satisfactorily on the basis of natural science. They are still left to another realm, to a realm that is above natural science, to the realm of the spiritual. You can call it God, you can call it whatever we like. It's a realm that is higher, that moves on a higher level than on the earthly level. So we have that long-range questioning about what happened. And we see that that independent of Mrs. Eddy's textbook, these thinkers have come to the conclusion that there are seven important points of creativity that are not answerable through natural science. Well, that's one long-range example. The second long-range example that you had on the assignment was to have a look into Dunois' concept of evolution. And so we take Dunois' book. Today, naturally, Dunois' book is no more well-known. I think it's even out of print, perhaps, at this moment, because all these books have a rather short life. Still, Dunois has presented a question, and therefore, again, question marks, and questions that cannot be answered by natural science up to now, and therefore, I feel he is still very what you say when it's still a timely issue. Is that right? Still a modern issue. Therefore, I feel that it is worthwhile considering it, and I remember how I first saw that. It was actually here in America way back in 1948. On the last day of the year, the first day of the year, I was in a nice train going from New York to St. Louis, visiting a friend of ours, our first pillar in America, which we had, Bill Drosten, Flora Drosten in St. Louis. And on that way, I was reading Duino's book. And as I was reading it, and that has a lot of scientific terms in it, which I couldn't quite understand, but in the long run, it began to fascinate me. And then suddenly, he summarized everything on the page and said, now let's see what we have really found out. And summarizing his findings, I certainly could see that they are symbolizing really the seven stages of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, that they were showing really that the answer to evolution can only be found in the seven synonymous terms, because he would show that the evolution of life on this planet has undergone seven stages, which cannot be explained through the laws of nature. And therefore, he concludes that there must exist other laws than the laws of matter, than the laws of nature, other laws that have interfered, so to say, with the laws of nature, and have therefore have set at void, set at null, set at naught, thank you, have therefore set at naught the laws of nature, so that the spiritual laws began to rule over the laws of nature, contrary to the laws of nature. And I think this is a very important point to see. If we begin to see that, we get a terrific trust in the world order, so that we feel, my God, if we entertain within our consciousness the world order of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth, and love, if we entertain that and know what it means, that we entertain within us such a fundamental law that it begins to set at naught everything that tries to evolve in a way, in a direction that is not in a God-like way, and therefore is a corrective within us as we go along in our life, that it will act as a corrective without actually that we know it, because it is so fundamental that it will, so to say, forestall all miscreation and misdirection. So, I ask you to consider that little booklet that I once wrote about the recent theory of evolution. Actually, it's no more a recent theory after 25 years. It's now quite an old theory. And I guess sometimes when we need to reprint it, we must change that title. It's no more a recent theory. But at the time I wrote it, it was very recent. But the problem stated are still the same. Did you see why, what was his first big question mark, which cannot be explained through natural science? What was his great question first?
What is cause?
Huh? What is the beginning of life? Huh? What has caused life to come into being? Huh? Yes? And therefore, he is asking, like Dubois-Raymond is asking, what is the first cause? What is the creative ability? Who? What create the creative ability? You cannot go back. No? You come at the point where you can't ask what creates creative ability. Or else you would ask what creates that creative, which creates that creative ability, and you go back and back and back. So there is at the beginning something that happened, huh, which does not lend itself anymore to ask further question backward. You come to a first that has no precedent. And therefore, if we take mind as the first cause, and mind is always capitalized mind, then we have there in that one mind the divine will, the divine conception of creation, the primordial conception of being, there everything starts. Therefore, he actually gives in his book these terms that he says, well, the whole thing is a question of what is the first cause, what is creative ability, what is the divine will, who has that divine will, or what has that divine will? They are very fundamental questions. Humanly, we always reason backward to a cause. And actually, because we reason humanly, we never find an answer, because human reasoning is not divinely logic. Therefore, at one point, we have to make a stop and lift the whole thing to a higher level, and lift it out from the human reasoning into a level, into a realm of divine reasoning or divine logic. I don't know how much you know about the black holes, about the Big Bang theory. Well, the Big Bang theory is that the whole cosmos which we live in, the whole universe of the stellar universe we live in, started some around about 15 or 16 billion years ago, was just a Big Bang out of nothing. It's a creation out of nothing. And yet out of nothing came such a lot of matter and energy. You see, this is not reasonable for the human mind. The human mind cannot reason that way and say, out of nothing can become something. But that's the idea of creation. And that's the idea of the Big Bang theory, that some 15 billion years ago there was that Big Bang in an emptiness, a bang happened, and from that bang on we had space and time, and with space and time, energy and matter. And so, again, we have a sense, well, what was before the Big Bang? The Big Bang.